The following is a seminar entitled Beware of Mayavadi Philosophy, Part 3, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on June 24th, 2012, in Sydney, Australia.
So now we have the final session of our Beware of Mayavadi Philosophy Seminar. To invoke the auspiciousness and the blessings of the previous acharyas. Om Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Paragamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragnatanvitam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Padijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamsha. So the cover of the seminar booklet shows the pastime of Lord Chaitanya. So we are going to now directly connect with that pastime through the mercy of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And I recommend you all read this. We don't have time to read all the purports. We're going to hit the high points of the chapter and talk about it as we go along. But I recommend you all read, when you have time, Adi Leela Chapter 7. Because this is where, in detail, the Mayavadi philosophy is described, how Lord Chaitanya attracted all the Mayavadis. So it's a very, very important chapter. In fact, when this, before the CC was published, Chaitanya Charitamrita was published, Prabhupada had this chapter published as a separate book. It's a very important chapter, the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It was published as a separate book by the BBT, this chapter. It's such an important chapter. So we're going to just start kind of, it's a very lengthy chapter. I mean, like, to, you know, we're not going to read every single verse because it's a very big chapter. I mean, we're talking, you know, over like 200 verses or something like that. Chapter actually goes up to verse number 171. So we don't have time to read the whole chapter unless we spent, you know, a whole weekend. But so we're going to hit some high points, or we're going to talk about the different points we can learn from this wonderful, wonderful description given by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. So we're going to begin with text number 22. Sri Panchatattva themselves danced again and again, and thus made it easier to drink nectarian love of Godhead. They danced, cried, laughed, and chanted like madmen, and in this way they distributed love of Godhead. In distributing love of Godhead, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates did not consider who was a fit candidate and who was not, nor where such a distribution should or should not take place. They made no conditions. Wherever they got the opportunity, the members of the Panchatattva distributed love of Godhead. Although the members of the Panchatattva plundered the storehouse of love of Godhead and ate and distributed its contents, there was no scarcity, for this wonderful storehouse is so complete that as the love is distributed, the supply increases hundreds of times. And that's a nice point for us to remember. Well, if I distribute too much mercy, then I'll lose something. No. The more you distribute the mercy of Krishna to others, the more you get the mercy. Hundreds of times you will get. This is why I travel and preach all over the world, and I'm greedy for the mercy. You see, I got so much mercy from Prabhupada, you see. So whatever mercy I've gotten from Prabhupada, I travel all over the world and I share that mercy. And you know what happens? I get even more mercy from Prabhupada. And then I have even more mercy to distribute. So this is how it works, you see. So those who are intelligent, those who actually, I'm not very intelligent, but I'm fortunate. Those who are intelligent, they realize the great boon that comes in preaching, and they take every opportunity they can to distribute this mercy. The flow of love of God had swelled in all directions, and thus young men, old men, women and children were all immersed in that inundation. And now text 26, one of my favorite verses you'll hear me often quoting in my lectures. I'll give you the Bengali on this one. Sat janna dur janna pangu jadda andagana prema vanyaya dubaila jagatera janna. The Krishna consciousness movement will inundate the entire world and drown everyone, whether one be a gentleman, a rogue, or even lame, invalid, or blind. When the five members of the Panchatattva saw the entire world drowned in love of Godhead and the seed of material enjoyment in the living entities completely destroyed, they all became exceedingly happy. The more the five members of the Panchatattva caused the rains of love of Godhead to fall, the more the inundation increases and spreads all over the world. The impersonalists, fruitive workers, false logicians, blasphemers, non-devotees, and lowest among the student community are very expert in avoiding the Krishna consciousness movement, and therefore the inundation of Krishna consciousness cannot touch them. Seeing that the Mayavadis and others were fleeing, Lord Chaitanya thought, I wanted everyone to be immersed in this inundation of love of Godhead, but some of them have escaped. Therefore, I shall devise a trick to drown them also. Just see Garanga's mercy. He's going to trick all the people who escape the flood. He's going to find a trick to get all of them inundated in this tidal wave of Krishna prana. Thus, the Lord accepted the sannyas order of life after full consideration. He didn't have to take sannyas, but that was his trick to get everyone inundated. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu remained in household or life for 24 years, and on the verge of his 25th year, he accepted the sannyas order. After accepting the sannyas order, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu attracted the attention of all those who evaded him, beginning with the logicians. Thus, the students, infidels, fruitive workers, and critics all came to surrender under the lotus feet of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya excused them all, and they merged into the ocean of devotional service, for no one can escape the unique, loving network of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to deliver all the fallen souls, therefore he devised many methods to deliver them from the clutches of Maya. All were converted into the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, even the mlechas and the yavanas. Only the impersonalists, followers of Shankaracharya, evaded him. So now the exciting story of how he captured the Mayavadis and made them his devotees. This is a wonderful, wonderful history. It's not a story, it's a history. There's a difference. It's not a make-believe story. This is fact. Every single syllable is fact. While Lord Chaitanya was passing through Varanasi on his way to Vrindavan, the Mayavadi sannyasi philosophers blasphemed against him in many ways. Although a sannyasi, this is not what they say about him, although a sannyasi, he does not take interest in the study of Vedanta, but instead always engages in chanting and dancing in Sankirtan. This Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is an illiterate sannyasi, and therefore he does not know his real function. Guided only by his sentiments, he wanders about in the company of other sentimentalists. Hearing all this blasphemy, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu merely smiled to himself, rejected all these accusations, and did not talk with the Mayavadis. Thus, neglecting the blasphemy of the Varanasi Mayavadis, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu proceeded to Mathura. And after visiting Mathura, he returned to meet the situation. This time, Lord Chaitanya stayed at the house of Chandrasekhar, although he was regarded as a Shudra or Kayasta, for the Lord, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is completely independent. As a matter of principle, Lord Chaitanya regularly accepted his food at the house of Topan Mishra. He never mixed with other sannyasis, nor did he accept invitations from them. When Sanatana Goswami came from Bengal, he met Lord Chaitanya at the house of Topan Mishra, where Lord Chaitanya remained continuously for 2 months to teach him devotional service. on the basis of scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam, which reveal these confidential directions. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Sanatana Goswami regarding all the regular activities of a devotee. While Lord Chaitanya was instructing Sanatana Goswami, both Chandrasekhar and Tapan Mishra became very unhappy. Therefore, they submitted an appeal unto the lotus feet of the Lord. How long can we tolerate the blasphemy of your critics against your conduct? We should give up our lives rather than hear such blasphemy. The Mayavadi sannyasis are all criticizing your holiness. We cannot tolerate hearing such criticism, for this blasphemy breaks our hearts. While Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar were thus talking with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he only smiled slightly and remained silent. At that moment, a Brahmin came there to meet the Lord. The Brahmin immediately fell at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and requested him to accept his proposal in a joyful mood. My dear Lord, I have invited all the sannyasis of Benares to my home. My desires will be fulfilled if you also accept my invitation. Just see how Krishna, Lord Chaitanya arranged this whole thing to happen, you see. It's not by chance this Brahmin happened to show up just at that moment, you see. This was all the arrangement of the Lord, that this Brahmin was inspired by the Lord to come and arrange this whole meeting where he would take the meal with all these Mayavadis, you see. My dear Lord, I know that you never mix with other sannyasis, but please be merciful unto me and accept my invitation. Lord Chaitanya smiled and accepted the invitation of the Brahmin. He made his gesture to show his mercy to the Mayavadi sannyasis. The Brahmin knew that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would never went to anyone else's house, yet due to inspiration from the Lord, he earnestly requested him to accept this invitation. The next day, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to the house of that Brahmin, he saw all the sannyasis of Benares sitting there. As soon as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the sannyasis, he immediately offered obeisances, and then he went to wash his feet. After washing his feet, he sat down by the place where he had done so. That's considered, you know, like, that's the dirty place, you see. Instead of sitting with everyone else, he sat, very humbly sat in the dirty place where everybody washes their feet, you see. After sitting on the ground, he sat on the ground even, you see. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited his mystic power by manifesting an effulgence as brilliant as the illumination of millions of suns. When the sannyasis saw the brilliant illumination of the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, their minds were attracted, and they all immediately gave up their sitting places and stood in respect. The leader of all the Mayavadi sannyasis present was named Prakashananda Sarasvati. And after standing up, he addressed Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as follows, with great respect. Please come here. Please come here, Your Holiness. Why do you sit in that unclean place? What has caused your lamentation? The Lord replied, I belong to a lower order of sannyasis. Therefore, I do not deserve to sit with you. Prakashananda Sarasvati, however, caught Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally by the hand and seated him with great respect in the midst of the assembly. Prakashananda Sarasvati then said, I understand that your name is Sri Krishna Chaitanya. You are a disciple of Keshava Bharati, and therefore you are glorious. You belong to our Shankara Sampradaya and live in our village, Varanasi. Why then do you not associate with us? Why is it that you avoid even seeing us? You are a sannyasi. Why do you indulge in chanting and dancing, engaging in your Sankirtan movement in the company of fanatics? Meditation and the study of Vedanta are the sole duties of a sannyasi. Why do you abandon these to dance with fanatics? You look as brilliant as if you were Narayan yourself. Will you kindly explain the reason you have adopted the behavior of low-class people? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied to Prakashananda Sarasvati, My dear sir, kindly hear the reason. My spiritual master considered me a fool, and therefore he chastised me. You are a fool, he said. You are not qualified to study Vedanta, and therefore you must always chant the holy name of Krishna. This is the essence of all mantras or Vedic hymns. Simply by chanting the holy name of Krishna, one can obtain freedom from material existence. Indeed, simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, one will be able to see the lotus feet of the Lord. In this age of Kali, there is no other religious principle than the chanting of the holy name, which is the essence of all Vedic hymns. This is the purport of all scriptures. After describing the potency of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, my spiritual master taught me another verse, advising me to always keep the name within my throat. Haranama, 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 Iva Kevalam, Kalo Naste, Vanaste, Vanaste, Vagati, Aranyata. In this age of Kali, there is no alternative, there is no alternative, there is no other alternative for spiritual progress than the holy name, the holy name, the holy name of the Lord. Since I've received this order from my spiritual master, I always chant the holy name, but I think that by chanting and dancing the holy name, I've become bewildered. While chanting the holy name of the Lord in pure ecstasy, I lose myself, and thus I laugh, cry, and dance and sing just like a madman. Collecting my patience, therefore, I began to consider the chanting of the holy name of Krishna had covered all of my spiritual knowledge. I saw that I'd become mad by chanting the holy name, and I immediately submitted this to the lotus feet of my spiritual master. My dear Lord, what kind of mantra have you given me? I've become mad simply by chanting this Maha Mantra. Chanting the holy name in ecstasy causes one to dance, laugh, and cry. When my spiritual master heard all of this, he smiled and then began to speak. It is the nature of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra that anyone who chants it immediately develops his loving ecstasy for Krishna. Religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation are known as the four goals of life. Before love of Godhead, the fifth and highest goal, these appear as significant as straw in the street. For a devotee who was actually developed Bhav, the pleasure derived from Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha appears like a drop in the presence of the sea. The conclusion of all revealed scriptures is that one should awaken his dormant love of Godhead. You are greatly fortunate to have already done so. It is characteristic of love of God that by nature it induces transcendental symptoms in one's body and makes one more and more greedy to achieve the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. When one actually develops love of God, he naturally sometimes cries, sometimes laughs, sometimes chants, and sometimes runs here and there, just like a madman. Perspiration, trembling, standing in one's bodily hairs, tears, faltering, fading, madness, melancholy, patience, pride, joy, and humility. These are the various natural symptoms of ecstatic love of Godhead, which causes a devotee to dance and float in an ocean of transcendental bliss while chanting the Maha Mantra. It is very good, my dear child, that you have attained the supreme goal of life by developing love of Godhead. Thus you have pleased me very much, and I am very much obliged to you. My dear child, continue dancing, chanting, and performing sankirtan in association with devotees. Furthermore, go out and preach the value of chanting Krishna Nam. For by this process, you will be able to deliver all fallen souls. Saying this, my spiritual master taught me one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. It is the essence of all the Bhagavatam's instructions, and therefore he instructed me this verse again and again. Evaṁ vrata svapriya namma kritya jata nirago dhrita chitta uchchai asatyato rodhite rauti gao tat yunman vandit yati lokabhaya. When a person is actually advanced and takes pleasure in chanting the holy name of the Lord who is very dear to him, he is agitated and loudly chants the holy name. He also cries, laughs, becomes agitated and chants just like a madman, not caring for outsiders. I firmly believe in the words of my spiritual master. Therefore, I always chant the holy name of the Lord alone and in the association of devotees. That holy name of Krishna sometimes causes me to chant and dance, and therefore I chant and dance. Please do not think that I intentionally do it. I do it automatically. Compared to the ocean of transcendental bliss which is tasted by the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, the pleasure derived from impersonal Brahman realization is like the shallow water in a canal. Now, Lord Chaitanya is coming to the point, you see. He's telling him, you know, what you have is nowhere and is nothing. It's just the shallow water in a canal compared to an ocean. And Prabhupada gives a nice quote here from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Brahmando bhavat esha chetparada gunikrita naiti bhakti sukham bodhe paramanu tulamapi. If Brahmananda, the transcendental bliss derived from understanding impersonal Brahman, impersonal Brahman, were multiplied a million times, such a quantity of Brahmananda would not compare with even an atomic portion of the pleasure derived in pure devotional service. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1138. Lord Chaitanya continues, my dear Lord, O Master of the Universe, since I have directly seen you, my transcendental bliss has taken the shape of a great ocean. Being situated in that ocean, I now realize that all other so-called happiness to be like water contained in the hoofprint of a calf. After hearing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the Mayavadi sannyasis were moved. Their minds changed, and thus they spoke with pleasing words. Dear Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what you have said is all true. Only one who is favored by fortune attains the love of God. Dear sir, there is no objection to your being a great devotee of Lord Krishna. Everyone is satisfied with this, but why do you avoid discussion on the Vedanta Sutra? What is the fault in it? After hearing the Mayavadi sannyasi speak in that way, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smiled slightly. Again, he's smiling slightly. It's a very subtle, slight smile, you see. It's happened at least twice now in this chapter. A slight smile, you see. And he said, my dear sirs, if you don't mind, I can say something to you regarding Vedanta philosophy. So now he's going to give him the preaching. You tell him about, he was showing himself to be carried away in the ecstasy, you know, in the ecstasy. But now he's going to show them he's more learned in Vedanta than they are. You see? Now he's going to show them that side. That absolute truth is realized by the seriously inquisitive student or sage who is well equipped with knowledge, and he's become detached by rendering devotional service and hearing the Vedanta Sutri, Vedanta Shruti. Hearing this, the Mayavadi sannyasi became somewhat humble and addressed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Narayan himself, who they all agreed he was. Why were they thinking he's Narayan? Because that is their philosophy, you see. The Mayavadi sannyasis address each other, Namo Narayan. Everyone is Narayan, you see. Because they believe that everyone is Narayan. For they thought he had realized that he'd become perfect in his Mayavadi sannyas, and now he's truly become Narayan. And that was their vision, you see. Dear Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they said, to tell you the truth, we are greatly pleased to hear your words, and furthermore, your bodily features are so pleasing that we feel extraordinary satisfaction in seeing you. Dear sir, by your influence, our minds are greatly satisfied, and we believe that your words will never be unreasonable. Therefore, you can speak on Vedanta Sutra. The Lord said, Vedanta philosophy consists of words spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, in the form of Vyasadeva. The material defects of mistakes, illusions, cheating, and sensory inefficiency do not exist in the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The absolute truth is ascribed by the Upanishads and Brahma Sutra, but one must understand the verses as they are. That is the supreme glory and understanding. This reminds us of another pastime. I'm not going to, with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. This is just a little aside. He had a similar pastime. This was another Mayavadi in the court of Maharaj Pratap. The court pundit was of Maharaj Prataparudra was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And he also noticed that Lord Chaitanya is a very nice sannyasi, but he's hanging out with these fanatics, these Hare Krishna fanatics, you see, singing and dancing all day. You should be studying Vedanta. What are you doing, singing and dancing? You know, you should be. So he said, "You come to my, come to me, and I will train you in Vedanta philosophy." So Lord Chaitanya, being very humble, said, "Okay." He sat there for days, hearing Mayavadi philosophy from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, not saying a word, just hearing for many, many days. And finally, Sarvabhauma said that, "Don't you have any questions? You've been hearing for many days. Don't you have any questions?" He said, "No, I don't have any questions." He said, the meaning of the codes of Vedanta Sutra is very clear, but your commentary is like covering clouds. Sarvabhauma was absolutely shocked. A disciple doesn't say that to the spiritual master, you know? You're covering the meaning. Your explanation is covering the meaning of the scripture. I mean, that's called hatimata, a mad elephant offense. But it wasn't in this case because it was true. And Saravana was shocked. Actually, that night, Mother Sarasvati revealed to him, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Saravana surrendered, became a devotee. So now that was in Jagannath Puri, and now he's in Benares with another conversion taking place now. In this conversion, there was, I don't know how this Brahmin did it, but there was 30,000 sannyasi disciples. I mean, it must have been a very big house, or maybe there was a big yard or something, you know, a big field near the house or something. 30,000 described. So anyway, we'll continue. Let's see. All right. Sripad Shankaracharya has described all the Vedic literatures in terms of indirect meanings. One who hears such explanations is ruined. This is what I was describing earlier. Now, Shankaracharya is not at fault, for he has thus covered the real purpose of the Vedas under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, there's a very important purport now. We'll read this purport. It just brings out what I was telling you all earlier with more information. The Vedic literature, purport. The Vedic literature is to be considered a source of real knowledge, but if one does not take it as it is, one will be misled. For example, Bhagavad Gita is an important Vedic literature which has been taught for many years, but because it was commented upon by unscrupulous rascals, people derive no benefit from it, and no one came to the conclusion of Krishna consciousness. Since the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is now being presented as it is, however, within 4 or 5 short years, thousands of people all over the world have become Krishna conscious. That is the difference between the direct and indirect explanations of Vedic literature. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Mukya vritye se aratta parama mahatva. To instruct Vedic literature according to its direct meaning without false commentary is glorious. Unfortunately, Sri Shankaracharya, by the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, compromised between atheism and theism in order to cheat the atheists and bring them to theism. And to do so, he gave up the direct meaning of Vedic knowledge and tried to present a meaning which is indirect. It is with this purpose that he wrote his Sharirika Bhashya, commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. One should not, therefore, attribute very much importance to the Sharirika Bhashya. In order to understand the Vedanta philosophy, one must study the Srimad Bhagavatam, which begins with the word Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janma Jashiyaton Yataritarishashavi Tarate Shveshibhyagya Svarat. I offer my obeisances unto Lord Sri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, who is the supreme all-pervading personality of Godhead. I meditate upon him, the transcendent reality, who is the primeval cause of all causes, from whom all manifested universes arise, in whom they dwell, and in whom they are destroyed. I meditate upon that eternally effulgent Lord who is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and yet is fully independent. Bhagavatam 111. Srimad Bhagavatam is the real commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Unfortunately, if one is attracted to Sri Shankaracharya's commentary, Sharirika Bhashya, his spiritual life is doomed. One might argue that since Shankaracharya is an incarnation of Lord Shiva, how is it that he cheated people in this way? The answer is he did so on the order of his master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in the Padma Purana, in the Lord's, in the words of Lord Shiva himself, Mayavadam asat chashtrang prachanang bhaudamudshate mayavakalpitam devi kalau brahmana rupina brahmanaschaparang rupang nirganam vakshate maya saravashang jagatopyasya maharanartam kalau yuge vidantate mahashastre mayavadam avaidikam mayavakshate devi jagatam nashakaranat. The Mayavadi philosophy, Lord Chaitanya informed his wife Parvati, is impious. It is covered Buddhism. My dear Parvati, in the form of a Brahmana in Kali Yuga, I teach this imagined Mayavad philosophy in order to cheat the atheists. I describe the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be without form and without qualities. Similarly, in explaining Vedanta, I describe the same Mayavad philosophy in order to mislead the entire population toward atheism, by denying the personal form of the Lord. In the Shiva Purana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead told Lord Shiva, Dvaparadau yuge buddhva kalaya manushadishu svagamai kapitashtvangcha jananmad vimukam kuru. In Kali Yuga, mislead the people in general by propounding imaginary meanings for the Vedas to bewilder them. These are the descriptions of the Puranas. So you can see this is very authoritative. You see, Prabhupada is directly quoting from the scriptures. In the Padma Purana, he's quoting. You see. So Prabhupada is not making up anything. Prabhupada is simply giving us the proper understanding of Vedic wisdom. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments that mukya vritti, the direct meaning, is abhidha vritti, or the meaning which one can understand immediately from the statements of dictionaries, whereas gauna vritti, the indirect meaning, is the meaning that one imagines without consulting the dictionary. For example, one politician has said that Kurukshetra refers to the body, but in the dictionary there is no such definition. Therefore, this imaginary meaning is gauna vritti, whereas the direct meaning found in the dictionary is mukya vritti or abhidha vritti. This is the distinction between the two. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends that one understand the Vedic literature in terms of the Bidha Vritti and the Gauna Vritti he rejects. Sometimes as a matter of necessity, Vedic literature is described in terms of the Lakshana Vritti or Gauna Vritti, but one should not accept such explanations as permanent truths. The purpose of the discussions in the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra is to philosophically establish the personal feature of the Absolute Truth. The impersonalists, however, in order to establish their philosophy, accept these discussions in terms of lakshana vritti or indirect meanings. Thus, instead of being tattvavad, or in search of the absolute truth, they become mayavad, or illusion by the material energy. When Sri Vishnu Swami, one of the four acharyas of the Vaishnava cult, presented his thesis on the subject matter of Shuddha Dvaitavad, immediately the mayavadis took advantage of this philosophy and tried to establish their Advaitavad or Kevaladvaitavad. To defeat this Kevaladvaitavad, Sri Mamanujacharya presented his philosophy as Vashishtadvaitavad, and Sri Madhvacharya presented his philosophy of Tattvavad, both of which are stumbling blocks to the Mayavadis because they defeat their philosophy in scrupulous detail. Students of Vedic philosophy know very well how strongly Sri Ramanujacharya's Vashishtadvaitavad and Sri Madhvacharya's Tattvavad contest the impersonal Mayavadi philosophy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, however, accepted the direct meaning of the Vedanta philosophy and thus defeated the Mayavadi philosophy immediately. He opined in this connection that anyone who follows the principles of the Sharirika Bhashya is doomed. This is confirmed in the Padma Purana, where Lord Shiva tells Parvati, Shrinu Devi Pravakshyami Tamasani Yatakramam Yesham Shavanamatrena Patityang Janinam Mapi Aparatang Shruti Vakyanang Darshaya loka garhitam karma savrupachajatvam atracha pratipadyate sarva karma pratibrangshan naiskramyan tatuchochyate paratta jivayor aikyam mayatra pratipadyate. My dear wife, hear my explanations of how I have spread ignorance through Mayavad philosophy. Simply by hearing it, even an advanced scholar will fall down. In this philosophy, which is certainly very auspicious for people in general, I have misrepresented the real meaning of the Vedas and recommended that one give up all activities in order to achieve freedom from karma. In this Mayavadi philosophy, I have described the Jivatma and Paramananda to be one and the same. How the Mayavadi philosophy was condemned by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers is described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Anchalita, 2nd chapter, verses 94 through 99, where Swarup Damodar Goswami says that anyone who is eager to understand the Mayavadi philosophy must be considered insane. This especially applies to a Vaishnava who reads the Sharira Kabasha and considers himself to be one with God. The Mayavadi philosophers have presented their arguments in such attractive, flowery language that hearing Mayavadi philosophy may sometimes change the mind even of a Mahabhagavad. A Mahabhagavad, an Uttama Arikari, never falls down, it is stated. But even an Uttama Arikari, who never falls down, if he hears Mayavadi philosophy, he can fall down. That's very heavy. A Mahabhagavad can fall down. What to speak of little neophytes like us, you see? A Mahabhagavat can fall down. That's pretty heavy. An actual Vaishnava cannot tolerate any philosophy that claims God and the living entity to be one and the same. So that's quite a purport from Prabhupada. Just see how careful we have to be to avoid it. And it's everywhere. It's everywhere. We shouldn't be afraid to come out that, yes, God is a person. Shouldn't be afraid of that. That we have to blend in with the, you know, the spirituality people of modern day. No, we shouldn't be afraid to come out and say that God is a person. Supreme Personality of Godhead. We should never be afraid of them. We have to be very bold. Krishna will protect us. We have to see how Prabhupada was very bold. We have to follow that line, you see. We are the Prabhupada Nugas. We're followers in the footsteps of Prabhupada. And he was not shy to say that God is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you see. So now a few more verses here. According to direct understanding, the Absolute Truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who has all spiritual opulences. No one can be equal to or greater than him. This again, Lord Chaitanya is speaking to these Mayavadis now. Everything about that Supreme Personality of Godhead is spiritual, including his body, opulence, and paraphernalia. Mayavad philosophy, however, covering his real spiritual effulgence, advocates the theory of impersonalism. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is full of spiritual potencies. Therefore, his body, name, fame, and entourage are all spiritual. The Mayavadi philosopher, due to ignorance, says that these are all merely transformations of the material mode of goodness. So that's they say Krishna's body is simply a transformation of the material mode of goodness. That's what they say. Krishna's form, that beautiful threefold bending form, is simply a transformation of the material mode of goodness. Shankaracharya, who is an incarnation of Lord Shiva, is faultless because he is a servant carrying out the orders of a Lord. But those who follow his Mayavadi philosophy are doomed. They will lose all their advancement in spiritual knowledge. One who considers the transcendental body of Lord Vishnu to be made of material nature is the greatest offender of the lotus feet of the Lord. There is no greater blasphemy against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is like a blazing fire, and the living entities are like small sparks of that fire. The living entities are energies, not the energetic. The energetic is Krishna. This is very vividly described in Bhagavad Gita, the Vishnu Purana, and other Vedic literatures. Besides the inferior nature, O mighty Amdarjuna, there is a superior nature of mind, which is all living entities who are struggling with the material nature and sustaining the universe. The potency of Lord Vishnu is summarized in three categories, namely the spiritual potency, the living entities, and ignorance. The spiritual potency is full of knowledge. The living entities, although belonging to the spiritual potency, are subject to bewilderment. And the third energy, which is full of ignorance, is always visible in fruitive activities. The Mayavadi philosophy is so degraded that it has taken the insignificant living entities to be the Lord, the Supreme Truth, thus covering the glory and supremacy of the Absolute Truth with monism. I mean, just think about it. I mean, how disgusting it is, you know, to say that everybody is God. I mean, it sounds very democratic, you know, politically correct, you know. Everybody is God. But it's ridiculous, you see. It's absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. In his Vedanta Sutra, Srila Vyasadeva has described that everything is but a transformation of the energy of the Lord. Shankaracharya, however, has misled the world by commenting that Vyasadeva was mistaken. Thus, he has raised great opposition to theism throughout the entire world. According to Shankaracharya, by accepting the theory of the transformation of the energy of the Lord, one creates an illusion by indirectly accepting that the Absolute Truth is transformed. Transformation of energy is a proven fact. It is the false bodily conception of the self that it is an illusion. The Supreme Personality of God, it is opulent in all respects. Therefore, by his inconceivable energies, he has transformed the material cosmic manifestation. Using the example of the touchstone, which by its energy turns iron to gold and yet remains the same, we can understand that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead transforms his innumerable energies, he remains unchanged. Now here's the example of the Mayavadis, you see. They say, oh, it's all come, all we, everything has come out from that from God, that impersonal oneness, you see. They're, in other words, they say their example is a piece of paper. If you take a piece of paper and you fuse it, you have one little scrap here, one little scrap there. What happens to the original form of the paper? It's gone. Because God has expanded himself as everything, therefore he has no form. He's diffused himself out. He's not there anymore because he's that piece of paper. But this is not a mundane thing, you see. That's why Prabhupada said spiritual mathematics is 1 - 1 = 1. Is it? In other words, if you have a bank account, you see, and everybody in Sydney comes to draw money from your bank account every day. How long will you have a bank account? You see, you won't have a bank account very long, maybe about 20 minutes. You know, the first three or four people, even if they just take a dollar, if everybody took a dollar out of your account, how long would it take to go away? You know, not very long. If everybody came to my bank and took a dollar out of my account, it wouldn't last very long. Maybe by the afternoon it would be finished. My account would be over, you know. But if you have an account, you can take a dollar out and it remains the same. That people can go, people can pull out millions and billions of dollars, and you still have your $20 in your account. You see, so that is the Vaishnava understanding. You see, 1 - 1 = 1. You can extract everything from Krishna unlimitedly, and he never loses his form. He still remains complete, even though. Om, like that shloka, Om Purnam Madaha Purnam Midam Purnat Purnam Madachate Purnasha Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishyate. The Supreme Personality of God, it is perfect and complete, and although he is completely perfect, you know that verse. Even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. Krishna is never depleted. This is a personal understanding. The impersonalist can't understand that everything comes out and it must not have any form. Couldn't be anything left. You see, that's a misunderstanding. So, transformation of energy is a proven fact. It is the false bodily conception of the self. It's an illusion. The Supreme Personality of God is opulent in all respects. Therefore, by his inconceivable energies, he has transformed the material cosmic manifestation. Oh, we just read that, yeah. Although the touchstone produces many varieties of valuable jewels, it nevertheless remains the same. It does not change its original form. If there is such inconceivable potency in material objects, why should we not believe in the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The Vedic sound Omkara, the principal word in the Vedic literatures, is the basis of all Vedic vibrations. Therefore, one should accept Omkara as the sound representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the reservoir of the cosmic manifestations. It is the purpose of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to present Pranava Omkara as the reservoir of all Vedic knowledge. The words Tattvamasmi are only a partial explanation of the Vedic knowledge. Pranava Omkara is the Mahavakya, Mahamantra in the Vedas. Shankaracharya's followers cover this distress without authority, the mantra Tattvamasmi, Tattvamasi. In all the Vedic sutras and literatures, it is Lord Krishna who is to be understood, but the followers of Shankaracharya have covered the real meaning of the Vedas with indirect explanations. The self-evident Vedic literatures are the highest evidence of all. But if these literatures are interpreted, their self-evident nature is lost. The Mayavadi school, giving up the real, easily understood meaning of Vedic literatures, introduced indirect meanings based on their imaginative powers to prove their philosophy. In other words, when you come to the Vedic wisdom, you've got to come with an open heart, you see. Don't come with your agenda. I want to use the Vedas to prove my theory, you see. I have an opinion that, you know, I'm God, you're God, we're all God, so okay, we're going to use the Vedas to establish it. This is nonsense. Prabhupada gives an example in this connection. He says that you want to smoke marijuana. Now, this is only an example now. Don't get any wrong ideas. Some devotees were previously smoking marijuana. This is not an excuse to go back. So, if you want to smoke marijuana, smoke it with your own hand. So I'll explain what that means. In the marijuana smoking culture, which is illegal, you see, if you smoke the marijuana, then you get a stain on your fingernails, the marijuana stain. And when the police come to raid your apartment, they'll see, oh, he has marijuana stains on his hands, so let's check him. You know, frisk him, look in his pockets, look in his dresser drawers, find his marijuana stash. Because we see that marijuana stains. We know he's a marijuana smoker. Now we just got to find the stash so we can throw him in jail, you see. So the person thinks, well, I'm going to play it safe, you know. They have what they call a joint, the marijuana cigarette. They say, okay. He tells his friend, I tell you what, you hold it and I'll smoke it from your hand. So I don't get the stain on my fingers, see. So this is an example that Prabhupada uses, you see. If you want to smoke marijuana, smoke it with your own hands. In other words, what they do is they present their own nonsense philosophy, and they want to do it in the name of Bhagavad Gita, in the name of the Vedas, in the name of Vedanta Sutra. Instead of taking the credit that I'm saying this is my philosophy, they say, no, Krishna says this. Svetashvatara Upanishad says it. You see, they want to present their own agenda in the name of the Vedas. In other words, you smoke, you hold a cigarette and I'll smoke. Now, if you want to smoke a marijuana cigarette, hold it in your own hand. Be honest and smoke it from your own hand. That's the example, you see. So if you want to present your own philosophy, say it's your philosophy. Don't say it's the confirming the Upanishads or the Bhagavad Gita. You're being bogus. You're not being honest, you see. Be honest. If you want to have your own philosophy, okay, but do it. Say it's your own philosophy. Don't say this is what the Vedas say, because they don't say that. All the Vedas point to the personality of God, as we quoted this morning. Vedashtacharavairaham eva vedyo. All Vedas point to Krishna. Anybody who extracts an impersonal understanding from the Vedas is a cheater. He's simply a cheater and a rascal, and that's all. Except for Lord Shiva, he did on the order of the Lord. He's excused. He did it on the order of the Lord for defeating Buddhism, actually. It was all of the point of bringing Indian back to the pure Vaishnava culture again. It was a step-by-step process. You see? They couldn't come the whole way in one swoop, so they had to do it in steps, gradual steps. So all the Mayavadi sannyasis, see, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with this showed for each and every sutra the defects in Shankaracharya's explanations, all the assembled Vaishnava sannyasis were struck with wonder. All the Mayavadi sannyasis said, Your Holiness, kindly note from us that we actually have no quarrel with your refutation of these meanings, for you have given a clear understanding of the sutras. We know all this word jugglery springs from the imagination of Shankaracharya, and yet because we belong to his sect, we accept it, although it does not satisfy us. Now let us see, the Mayavadi Sannyasis continued, how well you can describe the Shastras in terms of their direct meaning. Hearing this, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began his direct explanation of Vedanta Sutra. Brahman, who is greater than the greatest, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is full of six opulences, and therefore he is the reservoir of ultimate truth and absolute knowledge. In his original form, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is full of transcendental opulences which are free from the contamination of the material world. It is to be understood that in all Vedic literature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal. When we speak of the Supreme as impersonal, we deny his spiritual potencies. Logically, if you accept half the truth, you cannot understand the whole. We were giving the example of Ardha Kukutinaya this morning. Now, it's confirmed by Lord Chaitanya, you see. If you take half the hand, you don't get anything, you see. If you want to cut off the head of the hand and just take the eggs of the rear side, you're not going to get anything. You're not going to get any eggs, you see. So Lord Chaitanya is confirming this reputation of Ardha Kukutinaya, half in logic. It is only by devotional service, beginning with hearing, that one can approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the only means to approach him. By practicing this regulated devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master, certainly one awakens his dormant love of Godhead. This process is called Abhideya. Now, someone asked him the question in the last session, can you just chant 16 rounds and follow the principles without having a guru? Well, what does Lord Chaitanya just say? What did Lord Chaitanya just say? By the supreme authority, Krishna himself appearing as Lord Chaitanya says, by practicing this regulated devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master, certainly one awakens his dormant love of God. So I think, well, Lord Chaitanya, I mean, I'd rather just take, you know, half of your instruction. Again, Ardha Kukutinaya. You got to take the whole instruction. Well, I like your recipe for banana bread, but I just don't have any baking powder around. I think I'll do it without the baking powder. What you going to get in the bottom of the pan, sir? Goo. You see? So Lord Chaitanya said, practice regulated devotional service. He didn't say jump to raga bhakti, imagining your rasa. He didn't say that. He said, practice regulated devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master, and then you will certainly awaken your dormant love of Godhead. If one develops this love of Godhead and becomes attached to the lotus feet of Krishna, gradually he loses his attachment to everything else. You see? Love of Godhead is so exalted that it's considered to be the fifth goal of human life. By awakening one's love of Godhead, one can attain the platform of conjugal love, tasting it even during the present span of life. Do you mean to say you can realize your rasa even while you're in your present body? Is that what Lord Chaitanya just said? Let's read it again. Love of Godhead is so exalted that it is considered to be the fifth goal of human life. By awakening one's love of Godhead, one can attain the platform of conjugal love, tasting it even during the present span of life. He did say that. Whatever you can actually realize, you become perfect in rasa, even in this present body. You don't have to wait for going back to Godhead and leaving your body. This is one of the amazing things. Prabhupada, in another purport, he says, generally we consider you get liberated after leaving your body, but he said, if you follow in the footsteps of Prithu Maharaj, you can become liberated even in the present body. So, the sky's the limit, Prabhus and Matajis. You can actually fully realize, become a fully liberated soul even within your present body, you see. So, it's not just an external thing. Well, you know, I want to become a well-respected devotee in ISKCON. You know, all devotees respect me and I do nice service. That's good. That's your regulated activity. You must do that externally. But within your heart, you see, you must learn how to dive deeper, deeper, deeper into Namaras. You see, the nectarian ocean of the name. That Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you see, that nectar, that ocean of the nectar devotion. Because actually one can achieve perfection in this very life. Prabhupada ordered me. He said, now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. So here it's confirmed by Lord Chaitanya, even in the present body, one can achieve the highest perfection, realizing one's eternal relationship with the Lord. So This is a great encouragement from the Lord for us to become very serious about our japa, very serious about strictly following the regulated principles, you know, not mixing them with sense gratification. The Supreme Lord, who is greater than the greatest, becomes submissive to even a very insignificant devotee because of his devotional service. It is the beautiful, exalted nature of devotional service that the infinite Lord becomes submissive to the infinitesimal living entity because of it. In reciprocal devotional activities with the Lord, the devotee actually enjoys the transcendental, mellow quality of devotional service. He's really letting the Mayavadis in a lot of nectar, you see. They've been in a dry Vedanta. Now he's giving them the full mercy. One's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, activities in terms of that relationship, and the ultimate goal of life, to develop love of God, these subjects are explained in every code of the Vedanta Sutra, for they form the culmination of the entire Vedanta philosophy. When all the Mayavadi sannyasis heard the explanation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on the basis of Sambandha, Avideya, and Prarojana, they spoke very humbly. Dear sir, you are Vedic knowledge personified and are directly Narayana himself. Kindly excuse us for the offenses we previously committed by criticizing you. From that moment, when the Mayavadi sannyasis heard the explanation of Vedanta Sutra from the Lord, their minds changed, and on the instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they chanted, Krishna, Krishna, always. Wow. Thus, Lord Chaitanya excused all the offenses of the Mayavadi sannyasis and very mercifully blessed them with Krishna Nam. After this, all the sannyasis took the Lord in their midst, and thus they all took their meal together. Wow. Really amazing. Just see. So don't be afraid to preach the truth. You know, learn this philosophy. Even just a few simple verses. You don't have to become a big, big scholar. Just like that Ishvara Parama Krishna verse. Or, you know, just learn a few simple verses, you know, and stick to them. Stick to the points of that Krishna has given. And have mercy on the Mayavadis, you see. Lord Chaitanya didn't hate the Mayavadis. He gave them his mercy. He only avoided them because they were criticizing him like anything. But he arranged. This was an arrangement by the Lord. He inspired that Brahmana to come. This whole thing was arranged by Lord Chaitanya, you see. So devotees are always thinking how they can bless the fallen conditioned souls. They're always looking for the ways and means to to defeat the hedonistic and the Mayavadi philosophies, so that people can actually come to the supreme nectar of Krishna consciousness. So, there's any questions? Yes.
When we say that Buddha was Krishna himself, an incarnation of Krishna.
Who?
But Lord Buddha.
Lord Buddha. Okay.
An incarnation of Krishna. Mm-hmm. Because he rejected the Vedas.
Yes.
We reject him.
So we don't actually reject him. He's a, you know, we sing his name in the Dashavatar Stotra. Buddha Sarira. We sing his holy name. That's in our songbook. We sing the holy name of Lord Buddha because he is Krishna's incarnation. So, but we don't follow his philosophy. It's like Shankaracharya. We worship him as a pure devotee of the Lord, but we don't follow his philosophy. These were, you could say, teaching techniques to help people come gradually to the proper stage, proper understanding. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna advises that a yogi should not eat or sleep too much or too little. How should we train ourselves to gradually reduce our eating and sleeping? Just take what you need. Prabhupada said, if you're sleepy, take a nap. Not too much, just enough to refresh. So just take what you need. No one's going to say, you know, you can't have more prasadam if you want it. Actually, Prabhupada told us. He said there were so many questions asked. And when Prabhupada's talking about reduced eating, devotees get so much anxiety. Oh, I don't want to displease Prabhupada. How much can I take? There were so many questions about prasadam. And Prabhupada said, if the disciple wants more prasadam It is my, I am the spiritual manager, it's my duty to provide it. So don't be in anxiety, you know, that someone's standing over you with a gun, you know, if you have one more chickpea, you're finished, you know. You know? Just take what you need to be enthusiastic in your devotional service. But not so much that you get sick. You see, that's all. Prabhupada said, well, you can easily digest. If you get sick and it's obviously not the right thing. Just take what energizes you for your service. That's all. Sleeping and eating, take what energizes you to be enthusiastic 24 hours a day to serve Krishna. And then naturally, you see, it also happens when as you get older, the body starts to operate a little differently when you get older. Eating will naturally reduce with age also. Okay, next question.
There was this instance when Prabhupada was here that Swami Bhan was saying that Lord Chaitanya persuaded the Mayavadis with his effulgence.
Yeah.
But this proves that it's not.
Yeah, that's right. There was one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, I think it's the same one who started that technical university across the street in Vrindavan, which is so disgusting in Vrindavan, an engineering school in Vrindavan. I think that was Swami Bhan also did that. But anyway, the same Swami Bhan, he came to Toronto and he was meeting with all the academic scholars, you know, in the university, telling that Prabhupada is not preaching correct Gaudiya Vaishnavism. He was making propaganda against Prabhupada to the scholars. And he said that this Prakashananda Sarasvati and his disciples, they were not defeated by argument. They were attracted by his effulgence. That's how they became devotees, not by philosophical argument. Therefore, Swami Prabhupada, who's making all these strong arguments in his books, he's off the track. He's not following Lord Chaitanya. That was the point. So Prabhupada heard this. He was saying that Lord Chaitanya defeated them and attracted them by effulgence, not by argument. And Prabhupada's retort was, that was argument, rascal. In other words, he's making an argument himself. Swami Bhan was making an argument saying you shouldn't use argument, and he himself was making an argument, you see. So Prabhupada said, Prabhupada told the Buddhists, don't let him preach in our temples. But then personally, Prabhupada was so tactful, he wrote him a letter and he said, soon I will be in Hawaii. You come and stay, we associate together. He wrote Swami Bhan. So he was merciful. This is my godbrother. But he told the devotees, don't let him preach in the temples. So anyway, here's another one. Yeah?
Just with what Prabhupada was saying, so with Lord Buddha,
yeah?
we accept that they are incarnation, but we reject what they say.
That's right.
Isn't that what the Mayavadis would tell that as that's a half hen.
Well, the Mayavadis say that we're also guilty of half hen. Actually, we completely reject his teaching, not halfway. Okay, if Voidists argue that everything is zero, how do they explain the fact that we all exist? Now we're getting some interesting stuff here. Actually, according to Voidistic philosophy, we don't exist. Actually, previously I was into Voidism, and I wrote a song in back my songwriting days called I'm So Unreal. If it went like, actually, I sang it. There was a big concert in Golden Gate Park with the Jefferson Airplane, the Grateful Dead, some of the big bands of the day, and I did a set in between these two famous bands. And I got up there and sang this song and said, hey, I'm so unreal, I don't really exist at all. And the crowd went wild. This was, this is really cool in the countercultural, this voidistic philosophy. Actually, we don't really exist. We're not really even here. We don't exist. According to voidistic philosophy, we do not exist. Period. So who is it that's thinking that he exists? You're not really there. You're not really there. You don't really exist. That's voidistic philosophy. It's complete denial of everything. Absolute, total. It's completely crazy, you know. But people are attracted to him. You don't really exist. Nothing exists. Even the concept of non-existence doesn't exist. Nothing exists. You see, that's voidism. It's absolute void. The Zen Buddhists are really into this philosophy, you see. And it's like, it's totally, they sit in zazen, this very rigid meditation, in their ashrams, and you have to sit for hours in this rigid meditational posture. And if you get a little sleepy, you know, like they do during japa, the master comes like with a stick and whap you with a stick. It's pretty austere. You know, eat some brown rice, get whapped by a stick. And you have to meditate on some koan, like, what is the sound of one hand clapping? Is it? It's supposed to flip your mind into beyond the world of logic into complete voidism. It's a very difficult position, the voidistic philosophy. Is it that we will become void after death? That everything is always void. According to voidistic philosophy, everything is always void. There's nothing but void. But we say that our philosophy is to avoid this void philosophy. Can you please throw some light on the tamasic puranas where Lord Shiva is... It's rajasic purana. Lord Shiva is described as the supreme, not in a tamasic purana. There are 18 puranas, 3 in each mode. I mean, 6 in each mode. 6 in the mode of ignorance, 6 in the mode of passion, 6 in the mode of goodness. And one of those is in the mode of pure goodness. That is the Bhagavat purana. So Lord Shiva, the Shiva Purana is not a tamasic Purana. Even though Lord Shiva is the Lord of Tamagun, his Purana is rajasic. It was described as rajasic Purana. He is described as the supreme in the Shiva Purana. Now, as I explained earlier this morning, I'm going to repeat it again, maybe you're not all here at that time. For a very young student who's just learning mathematics as a first grader or something like that, who has no concept of negative numbers, the teacher says, my dear students, here is a rule of arithmetic. You cannot subtract a number from a number smaller than itself. You can't subtract 3 from 2 because 2 is smaller than 3. You can't do that. The number has to be equal to or greater than the number. You see, you have to subtract from a number which is equal to or greater than the number that you're subtracting from it. So, you can't subtract a number from a number which is smaller than it. But then the student becomes a little older, a little more advanced in understanding. But yet, now my students, I'm going to tell you, that rule was not really an absolute rule. It was only a relative rule. Because there's such a thing as negative numbers, my dear students. You can subtract 3 from 2 and get a negative 1. You see, so when the student becomes a little more intelligent, they're taught this other rule that actually you can do that. So in the same way, for those who are not very advanced, who are in the modes of tamagun and rajagun, they are given different modes of activity to help them gradually progress to where they can come to sattvagun and shuddha sattvagun. That's why you have descriptions like Lord Shiva being the supreme in the Shiva Purana. They were written by Vyasadeva. Yeah, that's why Vyasadeva was feeling a little depressed. He compiled all the Vedic wisdom and he's feeling depressed. Now, what have I done? Something is wrong. You see. And that's why his Narada Muni, his Guru Maharaj Narada Muni, came to enlighten him. Yes, you have failed to give exclusive glorification. You mentioned him here and there, but you failed to exclusively glorify the Supreme Personality of God. And this is the defect in your presentation of the Vedic wisdom, you see. So now you must give Bhagavatam. In that way, Vyasadeva became completely satisfied, you see, when he gave Bhagavatam, the Bhagavat Purana. Okay. Can you please explain how to come out of an impersonal attitude when dealing with devotees? There's different ways to do that. One is, how would Prabhupada view this devotee? You see. Don't see in terms of some disagreement you had with that devotee, or some relative vision based on lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, or envy. Try to see objectively, how would Prabhupada see this devotee's service? How would Krishna see this devotee's service? And that will help you develop a better, a more proper attitude towards anyone. Okay. Who are better off, the Buddhists or the Mayavadis? Actually, someone who just says there is no God, they're in a better position than someone says, I believe in God, but I am God and you are God and we're all God. It's better to say there is no God. That's a better position. Can one achieve liberation through Buddhism? No, you cannot. You only get liberated. Genuine liberation only comes by developing love for God. What is it that you have received personally from the Lord that make you go on and on besides the hurdles that material world casts on you? The mercy of His divine grace, Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Pariva Jagacharya Astatarasadashi Shimadesi Bhakti Vedantati Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. That's what and keeps me going, you see. His mercy, His unlimited mercy. Sweeter, sweeter, sweeter than the sweetest honey. Prabhupada's mercy. Okay? All right. Can you please explain if the philosophy that all demigods are God is Mayavadi philosophy? Yes, it is Mayavadi. This conception in India that all the gods are the supreme, it is Mayavadi conception. It's a Mayavad conception. In fact, I have seen this philosophy to its extreme. My wife and I were visiting one man in Bangalore one time, and he thought he had really achieved the perfection of, you know, Brahman realization. He really thought he was there because he took us to his deity room. Now, do you all know that cartoon character, Dennis the Menace? Do you have him in Australia? Yes. So he had a deity of Dennis the Menace. He was offering puja to Dennis the Menace. I'm serious. And he showed us, he was pretty proud of it. I mean, it wasn't like a joke, he was serious. Oh my God. I couldn't believe it. He's offering puja to Dennis the Menace. So, this is Mayavadi philosophy, isn't it? It really was Mayavadi philosophy. Why is Lord Rama not worshipped in temples? There's some, I forget the actual details of the story. There's some description of why he's only worshipped in Pushkar. He's worshipped in Pushkar. I don't know if anywhere else. So I don't remember why, but there is a reason. Any other questions? Okay. What are Shruti and Smriti? The original four Vedas, they are Shruti, and the corollary literature, actually the Upanishads are also considered Shruti. And the corollary, the Smriti means the Puranas, it means the Mahabharata. This is called the Smriti. Shruti is the mother, and Smriti is the sister. Sometimes one might not understand what the mother means, so you can ask the sister, your older sister, what did mother mean by that instruction, you see? You can ask your sister, your older sister, what did mother mean, you see, by that instruction? And the sister can tell you. So the Smriti helps us to understand Shruti. Any other questions? Yes?
Maharaj, I had a couple of years back, some relatives who were believing Mayavad philosophy.
Yeah.
So they were mentioning that, basically they were asking me some questions, like kind of attacking. They said, they saw me offering food to Lord Krishna. So they're asking that if you're offering milk anyways is already touched by calf. He's already taken the mother's milk. So it's already like tasted by the calf. You're offering water, that water is already being dirtied by the fish in the sea. And you're offering flowers. Flowers already been tasted by the bees. So, I mean, they were kind of putting this question. So I did not know how to respond back to them. All I could say was I said doing some things better than doing nothing.
They're saying, well, the bees have already smelled the flower, so it's not offerable. The calf already had the milk, so it's not offerable. The fish already have tasted the water, so it's not offerable. That's what they're saying.
Yeah.
So why are you offering it? It's not really offerable. It's already been tasted or enjoyed by someone else. So how are you going to offer it to God? It's not pure. Krishna has told us exactly what we can offer. Patram pushpam palam toyam. It may be pure, it may not be pure, but we are following the order of Krishna. He is the Supreme Perfect. That's the answer. Maybe a bee did smell it. What can I say? Maybe a fish did taste the water. But it's Krishna's order. We must do. So that is perfect. Krishna is the Supreme Authority. He has ordered us to offer with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water. So we do that on the order of Krishna. If there's any imperfection in that, he will cover us up, you see. He will cover us up. We're protected by his order. Any other questions? So are you ready to fight? Are you ready to fight? Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. If I tell you everything is one, what would you say? It's all one. We're all God. What is your answer?
If we're all one, give me your wallet.
Huh?
If we're all one, give me your wallet.
Very good. You've learned very nicely. See, this Mayavadi philosophy is quite absurd because everything is one. If one person achieves Brahman realization, everybody will be automatically liberated at the same time. They say it's all one. Well, does anybody ever become perfect in Brahman realization? They say, oh yes, Swami so-and-so, he became perfect in Brahman realization. So if it's truly all one, then we all became liberated at the same moment that he did. You see what I'm saying? So there's so many arguments to defeat their stupid philosophy. It's all one, and you know, we're all liberated, you see. If it's all one, then you know, then we all have the same amount of money in our bank account. But it's not true. Where is it all one? Anywhere in this material world. So this philosophy is not very solid philosophy. Not at all very solid philosophy. So, do you claim that you're God? Anybody want to claim that they're God? Do we have anyone here who thinks they are God? See, in many assemblies there are people who think they're God. Many people think they're God.
If all is one, then why do we argue?
That's another point. If it's all one, then you will agree with me automatically because it's all one. You can't argue. The fact that you're arguing with me, we say that Krishna is God, and you say, then we're all his servants. They say, no, it's all one. But I say, but it's all one, then you would agree with me. How are you going to have a different opinion? If your philosophy is it's all one, therefore you must agree with me because it's all one. You see?
If I eat, you will be satisfied.
If I hit?
Eat.
Oh, yeah, if I eat, you'll be satisfied, you see?
Everybody will be satisfied.
So,
what
other Mayavadi arguments are there? Anybody's heard Mayavadi arguments? We can bring them out and discuss them. Yes?
Aren't we the spark of the same Supreme? We're the spark.
Huh?
We are the spark of all of same Supreme.
Yes, that's a fact. You just like the ocean of Pacific, the ocean of the Pacific Ocean is Pacific Ocean, but it's not the complete Pacific Ocean. So you are qualitatively God, because you're a tiny spark of Him. Qualitatively, you are God. That's a fact. But quantitatively, you're just a tiny part. You see, qualitatively, you are God. qualitatively, because you're a part of him. God is eternal, he's full of knowledge and bliss, and your liberated state, which is actually within you right now, you're also eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. But the difference is, you are tiny, and God is very big. You see? He is the emanator, and we are the emanated. If the Mayavadi wants to say that we're all God, we can say, okay, Krishna is the emanator God, and we are the emanated gods. You see? Can you emanate everything from yourself? Are you emanating this building from yourself right now? Can you emanate Sydney, the Sydney Opera House, from your body right now? No. But Krishna is doing all of them. The Sydney Opera House, the whole planet Earth, all the planets, all the universes, they are just emanating from an infinitesimal fraction of a fraction of a fraction of the unlimited potencies of Krishna. You see? So quality, because we are a part of him, we share his qualities, just like an ocean of a drop of ocean water shares the same qualities as the ocean, but it's not, you're the complete ocean. That's an important distinction. The Mayavadis say that we are one and the same with God. We say we are one and different with God. We accept that we are one, but we see the difference also. They say, no, it's simply one and the same. You are the supreme, you are the source of everything. By your desire, the sun rises in the morning. It's all because you are the supreme. But this is, are you making the sun rise in the morning? By your desire, it comes up? You see? No. By your desire, the seasons are coming? No. You see? So any other, what other arguments do the Mayavadis give? Anyone know any Mayavadi arguments? Yes. Huh?
There's an argument that now we don't realize that we are God, but over a period of time, while we meditate, we realize that we become God.
No. Yeah, we are not realizing that we are God, but in sooner we will come to know that we are God.
Yes, for now I am covered, but by and by I will come out as God, you see. But this is a fallacy, because if you are truly God, as you claim you are, then how can you be covered by anything? Because God is all-powerful. They say, well, I'm God, but I just forgot. Well, wait a minute. How can, if you're God, you're the supreme source of everything, everything is your energy, even forgetfulness is your energy. And that's confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 15:15. Krishna says, I am the source of forgetfulness. He states that in Bhagavad Gita 15:15. So forgetfulness is your own energy. How you, God, can be overpowered by your own energy. This is a fallacy. If you're actually God, my dear Mayavadi philosopher, as you claim to be, then how you can be, say, well, I am God, but I just haven't fully realized it yet. Nothing can cover you from being fully God. You understand? Nothing, absolutely nothing can cover you from fully coming out and being God. You see? There's no power that can prevent you from fully being God right now. You see? So show me your universal form, Mataji. Oh, yeah, I'm showing you, but you don't have the eyes to see it. Then you give me the divine eyes. If you are truly God, you can give me the divine eyes that I can see your Virat Rupa right now. You see, do it. You see, put up or shut up. You see? So in this way, one has to be very strong in philosophy, you see. Yes.
But continuing this argument, but I just allow to, it's also part of my leela, so I allow my energy to overcome me, and that's how.
Oh, it's my pastime. Well, we already covered that one. Prabhupada covered that one already. This is just my leela, you know. I'm actually the Supreme Lord. I'm manifesting everything, but I'm just playing the leela of being a worker at the local convenience store, you know. It's just my leela. And then Prabhupada said that you, the Mr. Convenience Store worker, are the Supreme God that we accept, but I am also God, but I am the kicking God. And my pastime is to kick you in the face. Yes.
Where does theory of evolution come from?
Was it?
Where is the theory of evolution coming
from? Evolution is a fact from the Vedic wisdom. It's confirmed in the Vishnu Purana, Jadajana Valakshani Stavada Lakshavingshati, Kramayarudha Sankhya Pakshinam Dashalakshanam, Chantalakshani, Vashavaha Chaturlakshani Manashaha. There are 8,400,000 species, and one is through the transmigration process, birth after birth after birth, you're gradually evolving from a fish to a plant, to a worm, reptile, to a bird, to a beast, to a human being. It's a natural evolution through the cycle of birth and death. The forms already exist in the very beginning, created by Brahmanji under Krishna's empowerment. All the 8,400,000 species were created at the very beginning of the universe, but the jiva evolves through them in the process of birth and death. And he gradually comes to the human form, you see. That is evolution. Darwin took half of it. Again, he's a guilty of Ardha Kukuti Nyaya. He took half of it, invented his own half, the other side. So, see, here's a few more questions. Could you please explain what does part and parcel mean? It's actually there in the dictionary. You can look it up. It has a specific meaning. I honestly forgot it right now. Maybe it'll come to... Maybe. I have it in my brain. You remember what it is? Part and parcel?
Part and parcel means it cannot be separated.
Oh, it's inseparable. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's right there in the dictionary. Prabhupada is not inventing these terms. These are... what you read in Prabhupada's books are standard English terms. Sometimes they're a little more... they're beyond our level of erudition. You have to look them up in the unabridged dictionary. But Prabhupada speaks very scholarly. All his terms are very scholarly and very correct English. I have the unabridged dictionary in my computer, in the Webster, Merriam-Webster unabridged, and I looked it up. It's right there. Part and parcel is in the dictionary. Okay. How can we recognize that one is acting under plan of the Lord or acting as per his own free will? Actually, we're always doing both. We're always doing both. Because Krishna has two different energies. He has the material energy and the spiritual energy. Spiritual energy, material energy. One will always be working under either energy. Just like here in Australia, there are two different energies. There's the free citizens' energy and the prisoner's energy for the criminals, you see. You can act as a free citizen or you can act as a prisoner. In either case, you're acting under the state of Australia. He governs you either as a free citizen or as an inmate in the prison. Now, it's your choice, your free will, which one you want. You can choose to obey the laws or you can choose to disobey the laws, but in either case, you will act under the dictation of the state of Australia. So in the same way Krishna does, you see. So your free will is there, and you're acting under the plan of the Lord. You have a choice, plan A or plan B. You see, you want eternity, knowledge, and bliss, or do you want birth, death, old age, and disease? It's your choice, but you're going to act under the will of the Lord in either plan. Okay, Maharaj, can you please explain how we can defeat the pot and sky example used by the Mayavadis? I gave one example already, that there's etherical particles. You know, there's a little, or you can say it like this way, there's a little piece of sky, you see, right here. Whether the pot is there or the pot is not there, that piece of sky is still sitting right there. And because the wall of the pot goes away, it doesn't change that there's a piece of sky sitting right here, you see. We don't think of it as a piece, but actually it is a piece of sky. Sky is an actual physical element. Ether is a physical element. Just like earth is an element, ether or space is an element. And there's a piece of ether sitting right here inside this pot. Remove the sides of the pot, the ether is still there. It's not that this ether then becomes everything. It's still that little chunk of ether is still the same chunk of ether, with or without the pot. Okay. I remember Srila Prabhupada saying that relative truth is that if there is a son, there is a father. Servant means master. The absolute truth means master and servant is the same. I don't know if I understand. Could you please explain how they are the same? Well, our Chincha Beta Beta philosophy does accept that the master and the servant are the same. They're one and different. Krishna is the master, we are the servants. So we are one because we are Krishna's energy. As Prabhupada points out, I quoted this morning, there is nothing except for Krishna. Everything is Krishna, and nothing is Krishna except for his original primeval personality. Krishna has expanded himself as everything, so everything is Krishna, you see. But nothing is Krishna save and except his original primeval personality. So both things are true. Everything that exists is Krishna's expanded energies from himself. So it's just Krishna expanded out. We are all his expansions. We are called Tatasta Shakti. We are the marginal energy, the marginal potencies of the Supreme Lord. We are his Tatasta Shakti. Yes?
In the scriptures, all throughout the scriptures, I never read about anything about dinosaurs and what happened to them. Dinosaurs.
What happened to the dinosaurs?
The dinosaurs. Actually, there are still big creatures around. There's the Timangila fish, although they haven't seen him yet. He's out there in the ocean right now. He eats whales. And there's also a giant eagle that eats elephants. They're existing right now. They haven't located them yet, but they're there in the Vedas we know. The Timangila fish and the giant eagle. He gives birth. He lays his eggs in space and they hatch in space. This giant eagle, yeah. Interplanetary eagles. They eat elephants. They're very big. So, you know, the species, if they're, sometimes they just concoct these different ideas based on skeletons. It's just concoction. But there obviously was some big creatures out there. Exactly what they speculate they look like, that's just their imagination. But there are some big bones, there's no doubt of. They have found some big bones. So. But those species never go extinct. They're existing somewhere within the universe. Prabhupada said that species never go extinct. We may not see them here, but they're existing somewhere. Even on this earth they can be existing. Just in some place where no one sees them. Anything else? Yes?
I learned from Prabhupada that there is only one sun is in each universe which is created, which is the center of the universe, and rest all are moons, not stars. They don't have the capacity to emit their own.
Yes, that is the thing. There's one sun, everything else is moon. That's
but Hubble telescope and all means they show pictures of different stars, supernovas. And
yes, they're reflecting the sunlight, like mirrors. They're like mirrors reflecting the sunlight. That's right. Someday they will, by their science, they will confirm what Prabhupada said. And they'll be amazed. How did Prabhupada know all these things? It took us centuries to find this out. And Prabhupada, centuries ago, Prabhupada revealed this in his books, and now we're finally figuring it out. That'll come. Gradually the scientists will realize that Prabhupada was right on every point. Gradually they'll realize, yes. Yes? Huh?
That even if they find out truth, they want to be the Lord, they will not take it.
That, I mean, this whole thing was confirmed in Judhakarma and Sadaputta's book, you know, Forbidden Archaeology. Because Darwin's theory was taken as fact, and any findings which did not support Darwin were put under the carpet. Well, that one doesn't support Darwin, so let's put that one under the carpet. And they found all these bona fide archaeological discoveries which were, as Sadaputta called them, a knowledge filter. They're put through a knowledge filter, you see, so people don't know about them. There's example after example given in a huge book, Forbidden Archaeology, showing that Darwin didn't know what he was talking about. And another point is, the time of Darwin, you didn't have the field known as molecular biology. It didn't even exist, you see. If you go down to the molecular level in the study of biology and you analyze it in terms of probability statistics, the field of mathematics, you see, you combine those two fields of probability statistics along with the molecular biology, then it becomes very obvious that the Darwinian evolution is impossible, scientifically impossible. You see? But, you know, you didn't have the statistical analysis and molecular biology during the time of Darwin. The material science had not evolved molecular biology and statistical analysis like we have it today. But the present scientific tools, even in empirical science, prove that Darwin is not true. But people are so dogmatized by Darwin that everybody accepts Darwin. The media, everyone accepts Darwin. It's like a fanaticism. These people are fanatics. You go to UK, I mean, it's horrible. You got a mirror, you get the, he's right there on the money. When I go to the UK, I have to use some money to get from our shuttle bus from the hotel to the airport, and we're transiting through London, and I have to have Darwin. I have to look at old Charlie, you know. The monkey. He looks like a monkey. Charlie Darwin, you know. Chucky Darwin. And then on the way to the temple, we go by the National Museum, and there is the big Darwin temple. It's a Darwin temple is really what it is. The Darwin, instead of we have our Krishna temple, they have their Darwin temple. I mean, it's unbelievable how much they worship. The Brits are so fond of Darwin because he's their hero. You know, he's a Brit, you know. And he's the greatest, supposed to be the greatest authority in science, Darwin, you know. Now they got their new one, you know, the new one coming up, that Dr. Hee Hawkins. Hee-haw, hee-haw. Yes?
Raj, I have to say two things. With Darwin's with evolution, it's still called the theory of evolution. It's not called the fact of evolution. So there's still... Huh? Haven't proved it.
The Darwin is still called the theory of evolution.
They tape it as fact. I mean, they call it a theory, but everybody accept it as fact. I mean, you can see in the media, they accept it as fact, as if it's a proven fact. I see it all in the media. It comes through different stories about this and that. It's gospel. It's accepted as gospel. Darwin's theory is taken as gospel. It's crazy. It's that people are so, they're fanatical. That he's the high priest of the new religion. He's the pope of the new religion, of empirical religion, you see. They're fanatics. These scientists are the high priests. It's very fanatical about their, it's fanaticism. They're not open-minded people. They're fanatics. They have blind faith in Darwin. And if you support Darwin, you're good. If you don't support Darwin, you're no good. Anything else? Yeah?
Maharaj, with that that Mayavad example of the pot breaking in the air, is that pot meant to represent God originally?
No, that's the living entity, the individual living entity.
But if the living entity was God in the first place, how can it break?
The pot is the symbol of his illusion sense of individuality. The pot represents his delusional sense of individuality. When actually he is nothing but the sky. But actually the sky is composed of so many little pieces of sky. That completely refutes the analogy. The sky is composed of so many little pieces of sky. Every cubic inch, you can divide it into cubic inches or cubic centimeters, the sky. Yes?
I listened to one Srila Prabhupada lecture in which he says about this, this is called Ghatakas Pataka. This pot being broken and it...
Oh, how does he give the example? What does he say?
It's called, I think in Bengali, it's called Ghatakas Patakas.
Ah.
And what he says, what Prabhupada says is, this is actually true for a material example. This is a material. Both sky and the pot are material. But the living entity are not material. They are spiritual. He gives an example of so many rivers come and merge into the ocean. But so many fish are there. But they retain their individuality.
Yeah.
Like that, the living entities cannot merge into one.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's Prabhupada uses that again and again. They want to merge into the ocean, but the river, the water merges, the living entities are like the aquatics. They're not like the water. Well, actually, our time is up now. And now I'll be giving the Sunday Feast lecture also. For those who want to hear some more nectar, you can stick around for the Sunday Feast lecture. In an hour and 15 minutes, we'll have the Sunday Feast lecture. So you can have a full day of Krishna Katha. How many of you are here for the Bhagavatam? How many of you have been here for all the sessions, including the Bhagavatam class? Oh, wow, look at that. So might as well stay you've come this far, I might as well go for one more session. Make your day perfect and complete. The whole day, nothing but Krishna Katha, you see. So I thank you all very much. This has been a wonderful opportunity to dive deep into this ocean of this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, this ocean of the nectar devotion. Prabhupada was very, very dedicated to helping us to become free from the grip of this Mayavadi philosophy, which is so much misdirected and confused the modern-day civilization. So we're entirely indebted to His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Now we offer our obeisances unto Him and thank Him for His giving us this mercy. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gaudavani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pushtacha Desha Tarane Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you very much.